Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
So we've got Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent here in studio. Evening, Rory. Hello. And Eddie O'Sullivan. You're on the line there, Eddie?
Yes, I am indeed.
Good. We have a Champions Cup weekend to look forward to. Ulster play La Rochelle on Saturday in Pool 1, a 1 o'clock kickoff there. Leinster will play Glasgow, who are pretty much out of it, to be honest. It's a game live here and off the ball on Sunday at 1 in Pool 3. And then Racing Munster kicks off 3:15 Irish time on the Sunday. But we might start with the story which is really blown up today and kicked off to an extent yesterday at Johan van Graan's press conference. Rory, were you down at it?
Yeah, I asked the question actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So and Ger Gilroy spoke about it this morning on the OTBAM show, and that got a lot of traction as well. So you asked the question about Gerbrand Grobler, who joined during the summer. Joined Munster during the summer and is due to make his debut, or certainly is up for selection this weekend. So, in short, what was the question you asked Van Graan?
He had mentioned in the earlier that he was fit and that he had worked with him as a young kid and he was looking forward to seeing him play. So I just thought it was, you know, he signed during the summer during the Lions tour, so it kind of flew in a little bit under the radar, and he got injured in pre-season, so it's the first time we'll see him in a competitive jersey for Munster. And I just thought, and Van Graan didn't sign him, I suppose we should add, it was a Razzie Erasmus signing. I just thought it was relevant to just see, you know, does he feel that Grobler has something to prove? What does he think of his past? And Van Graan said he believes that he did the crime, he did the time, and he's entitled to a second chance, that we all make mistakes, and that he would have no hesitation in playing him.
Mm. Van Graan's quotes: I believe life is very simple. All of us sitting here, everybody in life makes mistakes. He served his ban. He's worked really hard to get back to fitness. And then in the warm-up game, which I saw here, he had a big injury. He had to fight his way back. Such a talented player. So he has a lot to prove. The ban, in my view, is a long time in the past. 2015 is when the ban was handed out. And like I said, everyone makes mistakes. It's how we come back from them. So Grobler served a 2-year ban. He's 25 now. Served a ban. He was playing with Western Province. And the substance he took is an anabolic steroid used to treat breast cancer. Builds muscle, effectively, yeah, if we're to boil down the benefit of taking it. And got his 2-year ban, admitted it straight away. Do we know much about the circumstances?
We know he was a up-and-coming player who had been injured for much of that season and had a contract up at the end of the season. And he has spoken about how he felt under pressure to try and win a new contract and put on size, and took the, you know, he took responsibility. He did plead guilty, and he did, you know, he took it on the chin. He has spoken about how, you know, basically it was a pressurised situation, and that was his reaction. He was young, he made a mistake. The South African authorities banned him for 2 years. As a result, while he was banned, Racing 92 offered him a contract. He came back as big as he was when he went away. One of the reasons Munster was assigned him is because of the size that he is. And if you look at pictures of him as an 18, 19, 20 year old, he certainly doesn't look like 120 kg behemoth that he is now. So you would wonder whether he's still benefiting from the dosages that he took that season. He was out injured, as I said, all season. He wasn't supposed to play, I don't think, before the end of the season, but he came back early from injury and played, and he got caught. And that's the circumstances that he got caught in. Had he not played for the rest of the season, he may have gotten away with it. You know, we just don't know.
So this was all in the papers this morning after you asked the question yesterday. The lads in OTBAM saw it. Ger made the following point.
What does it say to anybody in the Munster Academy when a known confessed drug cheat who has served a ban for taking an anabolic steroid is brought into the club? What does it say to the Munster fans, and what do the Munster fans have to say about this? And if you're a sponsor, are you happy to be associated with the fact that this guy is now representing Munster, the province, Irish rugby by extension, and the brands who are associated with it?
So this is a conversation we really have to have. I think it passed a lot of people by when he signed. It certainly wasn't talked about much, so we should talk about it now. Eddie, where do you stand on something like this?
It's a difficult one because the guy obviously got caught red-handed. He admitted it, and then he got his time and did his time. So, like, you know, Ben Grant's argument is valid, that he's paid his price. And there will be a cloud over the guy. You know, it'll always be over his head, the fact that he did fail a drugs test. It's a difficult one for everybody, but I find it hard that the ramifications of him being in Munster is bound to be a factor in terms of, you know, as you mentioned there, you know, academy players, the sponsors, the brand. But I suppose if you're being kind of, I suppose if you're being humanist about it, you would say that, look, he did his time, he got past it, and we leave people out of jail for horrible crimes. So you probably have to step back and say it's got caught once. And I would say, yeah, he has served his time. I find it very hard to ban him for life on the basis of what happened. It's not an easy one. And I think there are some ramifications out of it. Like, I mean, it is a bad example in some ways to the academy people. But having said that, I find it very hard to say the guy is done and dusted, never to touch a rugby ball again. I think that's a very, very harsh position to take. And they don't take it in any other sport, from what I can tell. So it doesn't sit easy with me, but I find it very hard to condemn the guy for life. And that's the human side of the story.
Okay, we'll come back. Yeah, well, we'll tease out some of those points, Rory.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I think Munster had an issue. Donegal Ryan was leaving, and they wanted to sign Tadhg Byrne, but the Scarlets wouldn't release him this season. They had to wait another year, so they had to bridge that gap with an experienced lock who was able to contribute to the team straight away. So they couldn't really go to their academy, because certainly Razzy Rasmus had concerns over the size of some of the players that were second row players that are in the Munster academy. It was a constant theme. So he went to the market, and he was going to the market in March or April last year, which is a difficult time to go to the market, and Gerber Grobler was probably the best player available in the market at that time. There were probably others available. They may not have been as good as Gerben Grobler, but Razzy Rasmus had a judgment call to make then. The guy is entitled to rehabilitate his career, but Munster had no obligation to offer him that olive branch and to be the club. I know he'd already been at Racing and made that judgment call themselves, but Munster had a choice to make. They could have gone for a less impressive specimen, but not had the ramifications. They wouldn't have been enduring this talk about them this week. It was always going to come up at some stage. If, as I say, flew under the radar because it was the week of the third lines test, yeah. And no one was talking about Munster. So that's one issue.
Yeah, Munster made the choice,
and you know, the message sent to the academy players is, you know, if you're not big enough, this is the guy we want, and this guy used these methods to get this big. So. You know, I just think it's a malign message to send to the young players, and it just doesn't sit well with certainly doesn't sit well with me and a lot of the people that I've spoken to today, who probably weren't aware that this guy was in the Munster setup because he hasn't played all season. You know, it's not sitting well with them either,
because the cloud now that extends over him extends over Munster as well. And like, when you frame it as everybody deserves a second chance, I mean, sir, like in broader society, that's very much true, I think, because the alternative is we just lock people away forever if they make big mistakes. But sport is a privilege, Eddie. It's a huge privilege. And to play for Munster is a big privilege. Irish rugby and the brand that is, what that represents, is a very delicate thing, and it should be valued. And you really, really take away from it when you make a choice like this. And also, like, we're talking about this guy and his second chance. What about the many second rows who might be trying to fight for a place, a Munster contract, whose place this guy has potentially taken? Guys who are trying to make it in the pro game, and they're being faced with difficult decisions, and they're looking at what's happened here. I mean, you flip the coin, and it gets very, very shady, and it sits very uneasily.
Yeah, I get the uneasiness about it, but as well, it's sport, but it's a career. It's a career. It's a job, and so you say you ban the guy out of that environment forever. Now you say that you take the baggage on board if you take him in. The other thing I would say is I this is a big stink now, and we're all trying to talk about it and deal with it. Like, this probably should have this debate should have been front and centre when the guy was signing. Like, what do Munster do now? They say, well, listen, you know, everyone's unhappy now, so we're going to kick you to the curb. Good luck. I don't think that's fair either. I mean, why didn't we have this debate? I think the notion that, it slipped under the radar, I don't accept that, really. I mean, you know, due diligence. If anyone read about this guy when he was purported to be signing for Munster, they would have seen the evidence. And then was the time to put up your hand and say, listen.
Okay, but that's not really the issue. That happened for whatever reason. Who knows what huge story was happening that week. Happened. It's not up to journalists to do due diligence. Like, Munster can't make the decision based on what's been said in the papers that week. Don't Munster And doesn't every province in Ireland have to set their own standards? Like, the two-year ban is what's legally enforceable. I think a lot of people would like to see lifetime bans for doping. It's such an insidious thing. It destroys sport. You look at what's happening to a sport like cycling. It's awful. And but we can't get lifetime bans. It's not possible. It's just too tricky to get them through court. Shouldn't Munster say, well, do you know what? We're going to set our own standards here.
Well, they could have done that, and they didn't, because they took the position that they were giving the guy the fact that he served his time. Look, I would be actually in favour of lifetime bans for drug cheats. I don't have a problem with the principle of that, provided it's applied across the board. And we don't apply it across the board. So what we do then is we selectively penalise somebody more than the other because it doesn't sit well with us. And that's the part I find hard to square. You know, the guy broke the law, he served his time, and he's now an opportunity to come back in. Now, if Munster wants to make that a red line issue, or Irish rugby wants to make a red line issue, they should have done that before they signed him.
Yeah.
It's not, no, I think that's the bit I'm saying. And I look, I mean, you know, it's criticism of the media that, and maybe media don't like to criticise, but this was due diligence for the media, I believe, when he signed. It's all right to say, oh, it was a busy day at the office and we slipped under the radar.
I don't know circumstances. I'm just, like, I don't know. I don't know the exact date he was signed. But would that have changed anything if they announced his signing and we debated that day? He still signed.
Well, no, I think we would have known he was on the radar to sign. This could have been flagged for Munster. It's a big issue.
So it's now, it's the media's job to flag these things and to set the moral compass for Irish rugby.
No, I think if you want to make a big story about it now, it's a bit late, is my point. There's nothing you can do about it now. It's done and dusted. Like, if you made the case at the off, I think Munster may have reconsidered, Irish rugby may have reconsidered, and I think maybe they should have or could have reconsidered. Yeah. But to make it the biggest deal in the world now, is it's a bit late. Their horse left to step the stable.
Right.
Now, Just let me finish my point.
Okay, go on.
Finish my point is that I think this should have been kicked around when the guy was signing, when his name came up. Mm. I mean, I don't think he just parachuted into Munster. Nobody saw him coming. Nobody heard of him. You know, so there's an element of responsibility there with the media. It's all very fine now to make it a big story today. So I think that there must be some element of responsibility that goes to the media. If the media want to be the group who oversee the sport. Now, having said all that. I still think that it doesn't sit easily with people. But we can't pick one guy out and say, well, look, he's the guy we're going to make an example of. If this is the case, if Irish rugby is under no circumstances going to sign a player who has been a failed doping test,
yeah,
then that should be policy front and centre. Everyone should know it. And that should be the line.
Well, that's the point we can agree on. Let's jump off at that point.
And I just say one final point.
Yeah.
I do think there are risks there for Munster, as Rory points out. There are risks for the message they're sending to their academy players. There's risks for their brand. There's risks for their sponsors. Like the fact that they've put their arm around this guy. So putting all that aside, I think, yeah, it's a very, very tough one. And I would prefer if drug cheats were banned for life. I don't have a problem with that, but it has to be unilateral, it has to be universal. Like, to me, we can't have it one way for one group of athletes and different from other group of athletes. That is quintessentially unfair as well.
But nobody's banned for life.
But that's the trouble. That is the problem. So why do we suddenly decide that we want to ban somebody for life? And that's within our policy to do that, but obviously it's not the policy of the RFU. It's not the policy of rugby in Ireland.
Well,
and it's the same for people who are found guilty of cheating with drugs within Ireland. Irish athletes are not banned for life either.
Yes. So, look, that's a legal issue. Lifetime bans, it seems we talked about this in a few times on the show before. They're very tricky legally to enforce. So that's not going to happen anytime soon in the courts, it seems, or WADA or whoever hands out these bans are not going to be able to enforce that. However, you mentioned the key point, Eddie, which is Irish rugby policy, and that's where we need to go. Like, making this about a 25-year-old who's trying to get on with his life, I have some misgivings about it. I don't want to overly make it about him. This is an Irish rugby decision. This is a Munster decision. It's not about Grobler so much. So that's where we need to actually get talking here, Rory. That's the conversation. What is the Irish rugby policy on dopers caught red-handed?
Well, The IRFU would have had to authorise the signing. Reggie Erasmus would have gone to them with Gerben Grobler as a solution to Munster's second row crisis. So David Nusafora would have signed off on the signing of Gerben Grobler. So we can read into that that there is no hard and fast policy on it, and that they were perfectly happy in allowing him to come to Munster and play for Munster.
Mm. How was this received, or do we know, within the Munster camp?
Well, I suppose Johan van Graan was the was front and centre yesterday, and he worked with Grobler when he was younger, and he said he's perfectly happy. Behind the scenes, you know, we don't know how it's been received. We don't know how the players feel about having a convicted doper amongst them on a day-to-day basis. All we know is that he's been on the treatment table for most of the time he's been here, so they haven't seen how he could contribute to the operation. Sure. He was there through pre-season. It'll be interesting to see on Saturday, you know, on Sunday, if he scores the winning try, how that will be received. You know, I mean, will we all report it in the same way as we always do? You know, do we move on from this story now because we have addressed it at this time because he's making his first start this week?
Yeah.
It just doesn't sit well. If he's there lifting the Champions Cup in a Munster jersey in May, does it detract from that? I suppose that remains to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to know where it goes. Eddie says it's causing a big stink. It is, and it's kind of blown up this week for obvious reasons. You keep talking about it all year. His deal is 1 year.
Yeah, yeah. And Tadhg Byrne comes in next year. Okay. You know, that he was the preferred solution. This was the stopgap. And he will go somewhere else. And I just think there's an asterisk beside his name for the rest of his career. And I think it's up to us to highlight that. The headlines when he signed were Munster sign player who served the ban. It was just the week of the third lines test, so it didn't get a lot of traction.
Okay.
But in fairness, George, to finish, I think you're right about the point. The point is, it's not about this particular player.
No.
It's not about Grobler. Like that, it's wrong to demonise this guy, as you know, it can happen that way that he would be demonised.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be right. I think we have to be careful. The guy has served his ban, and like every other athlete in the world, in and outside of rugby, in every other sport, he has a right to continue his career. So if you're right, the debate should be around if Irish rugby wants to embrace somebody who has broken the law in regard to performance enhancing drugs. Mm. That is the debate. I think it'd be wrong to focus on this particular guy.
I agree.
It'd be wrong to forget, though, as well. I mean, we don't forget that Justin Gatland, what he's done. In other sports, we still, you know, that's one of the consequences of the crime that he committed. He's allowed to play again, but we can't let him forget that. You know, we can't just move on and say, you know, this guy's back. You know, I just think that it would be remiss of us to. We don't have anyone else like this in Irish rugby at the moment. That's why he's the lightning rod, and he's an example. And I guess maybe that the stink that this is causing is something that they'll consider next time.
One of the reasons people want a lifetime ban is, you take the Gatland case, it's not like the benefits of doping stop when your ban finishes. It's not like 2 years and suddenly you shrink back to what you were before. Who knows how long the benefits last for? There are theories out there. There have been studies done on mice in Sweden that it lasts right through the duration of your career and beyond. So that's an issue. But say we talk about an Irish rugby here as opposed to overly vilifying one person who's caught up in the midst of this. So Irish rugby, Eddie, probably needs to have a conversation. How are we going to treat this issue? Like, there were four players banned in New Zealand today. This is creeping into rugby or is there in a very big way already, but certainly we're seeing it more and more. So how is Irish rugby going to treat this subject? Will it look at the asterisks beside a name and say he served his ban? That's the Johan van Graan line today. He has served his ban, therefore there is no issue. Or will Irish rugby, should Irish rugby, think about setting a higher standard, say a zero tolerance policy on this issue?
It's a very simple debate. Yeah, you either set the zero tolerance or you don't. If you don't set zero tolerance, then you accept people who have served their time.
Hmm.
But if you do, if you say no, we believe it would be negative for Irish rugby. But then it has to apply across the board, not just overseas players, but Irish players as well.
Yeah,
that might be a club player. Club players have failed drug tests in Ireland over the years for one reason or another, and you ban them for life and they never come back. And you know that's, and it's not a black and white area all the time, because we do know players particularly the club level, who fail drug tests based on taking a supplement, just made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And you're saying then your career is over. You never touch a rugby ball again. Mm. And it's very easy to be black and white about this. And but I do think you're right. It's a debate for Irish rugby. If they want somebody who has, you know, taken performance enhancing drugs to be playing rugby in Ireland, but it has to apply across the board. It has to apply to Irish people, our Irish rugby players, just as much as overseas rugby players. That you've got to be fair about it as well.
Yeah, agreed. Whatever policy or stance they reach, and they're going to have to reach one now in light of this, because this hasn't happened before, Rory. It's certainly not as clear cut a case.
Top of the head, I can't remember it, and I think we have to be cognizant of the safety element as well, because this is a collision sport, and if people are using performance enhancing drugs to get bigger, faster, and stronger in a sport where we've all these issues around concussion, about injuries, about, you know, all the stuff that's happening in rugby, if players are using legal methods to get bigger, faster, and stronger, and then endangering their opponents and teammates, you know, that's another reason to talk about it as well. I mean, is, you know, do players who cheat put their fellow players in danger? Probably.
Mm. We'll park that for now. He's part of the Munster team going to France. It's the new U Arena. Racing beat Clermont 58-6 at the weekend. Clermont, though, left everybody at home, I think. They've an injury crisis and almost effectively said, well, we're not going to win this game anyway. So that scoreline could be slightly misleading. But they have, they're third in the top 14. They have won 7 in 8 matches. They beat Toulon away as well. So Racing are in pretty good form, it would seem. Munster have a very good record over them over the last number of years. This is in the new U Arena as well. It's a 4G pitch. So throw all that together, Rory, and talk to us.
It's under a roof as well, which I think is possibly more more important than the 4G pitch, because apparently the place is roasting. And if you watch the tries from Clermont against Racing at the weekend, it's lightning quick rugby. And there has to be a challenge for Munster in changing from the quagmires that they've been playing in for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and, you know, Irish pitches in this time of year, winter rugby to effectively summer rugby in the course of a week when they're training in UL. Now, they're on the 4G tomorrow, I believe, but yesterday they were training on their pitch, which is a heavy pitch, as most pitches are at this time of year. So there's got to be, you know, they're going from that kind of attritional style to kind of what they would be playing in April within the space of a week. So I think they're going to have to get their heads around that pretty quickly. Racing have a very mean defence. They're the best defence in the top 14, but they also have started scoring tries at a rate of knots since they moved from, like, their old stadium was a kip. This is just something we haven't seen before, this new stadium. It's brand spanking new. It looks like a spaceship, and it's a 4G pitch, so it's real top of the ground stuff. So that it's a very different challenge to what they would have faced last year when they went over and ground Racing down.
Yeah, Van Graan was making the point, Eddie, it affects everything, that 4G pitch. It's not just, well, you know, it suits certain players better. It affects everything, like breakdown strategy. He said you might get away with the least amount of numbers there because the game just moves quicker overall, so the breakdown becomes less of an issue. This is like, tactically, it affects a huge amount from a coach's point of view.
Yeah, it does. The game is half step quicker, at least. It's just a much more lively game. The breakdown scenario as well, one of the biggest problems I see with the 3G or the 4G pitches is that the ball is very unstable in rucks. It just wobbles out sometimes with the slightest touch, which doesn't happen on grass. It just doesn't happen. But ball just squirt out of rucks, which are a nightmare. And as well, I think there's a risk of injuries on these pitches, because you know your cleats or your studs lock into the turf, and if you go over on an ankle or a knee, it's very unforgiving. But apart from that, yeah, it's usually a faster game that might suit Racing Metro. But look, the bigger picture here, I think, is Munster don't have to win in Paris. If they do, it's great. I think it's game over. They're nailed down a home quarter final. But all they've got to do in Paris is get a bonus point and not let Racing get a bonus point, because next week in Limerick, Castro are going to send their under-16s probably, and that'll be a 5-pointer. It has to be, and that's all that Munster should be looking at. Now, like, I think that Munster's, it's all about, we've seen Munster this before. I mean, go back over the years, back in the mid-noughties when they would go down to France and they would have a barnstormer of a game. They'd lose, but they'd take home the bonus point, and that was the bonus. That was worth its weight in gold in the final game of the pool. I think that's where Munster are. I mean, it'd be very hard to beat Racing in Paris, and if they do, it'll be a great victory. But I don't have to beat them. They just have to not get wiped out, you know, let them get away from and try and reel in a bonus point themselves. That's all it's about.
That sounds very doable.
Absolutely doable, yeah. It's just about how they set their defence up, where they play the game. If they go out and try and win the game in terms of taking Racing on in a shootout, they could come out badly out of that, particularly on that turf. it would be a very quick game. It mightn't suit Munster. Whereas if they control the pace of the game and slow it down, play field position as much as they can, hold on to the ball, don't let Racing get their hands on it. Don't worry about putting on scores. Just keep the game tight. And that's a different headset than going out to win a game. Like, we've got to run and gun here. We've got to get a result. You know, you just take a slightly different, I suppose, you know, risk attitude to it, you know. And I think that's all they need. If they come out of Paris with a point, I think, you know, it's game over in that pool for them. Okay. I mean, that's the mission, I think. And if they can restrict Racing to not win, getting a bonus point, even that's even better. So yeah. I just think that's mission accomplished, and that's all they need to think about. But that would affect their attitude and how they would go and play the game and how they would manage the pace of the game and how they would manage field position and how they'd manage possession. That certainly, you would have definitely a different game plan to do that than you would if you're going to go and try and win a game away from home and throw caution to the wind. Munster are not in caution to the wind territory at all. They're in control of the pool.
Yeah. One of the interesting subplots, Rory, you wrote about it today in The Independent, is this Simon Zeebo interview. So what happened? Zeebo did an interview which he didn't think was going to pop up this week?
Yeah. He spoke to someone at Racing last week and... I don't know if they left it. It seems like they left it kind of loose. Yeah, he'll put that up at some stage, but he kind of may have presumed that it wasn't going to go out 5 days before they played against each other. And I mean, there's nothing incendiary in it.
He's not saying I'm thrilled to get out of Munster or anything.
No, it's Munster. You know, Racing are a great team, so are Munster. It just, it won't have gone down well, I don't think, in the Munster dressing room. But, you know, at the same time, it's Simon Zeebo, and he has a capacity to laugh things off that other people who take the game a little bit more seriously, or take, you know, not that he doesn't take it seriously, but, you know, I think he's able to get away with it a little bit more, get away with these things. Like, he plays by his own rules a little bit, but it was... certainly another subplot. Like, Munster are just giving us storyline after storyline this week, and that was another one that just popped up yesterday, 5 days out. You know, an interesting time to confirm your new signing, and I don't think it's going to affect how Zeebo plays at the end of the day. But it was interesting. I don't know, are they trying to unsettle people or anything like that? I think they've probably chosen the wrong guy to go after.
Leinster play Glasgow on the Sunday. It's at the RDS. Leinster are top of pool three. They're 5 points clear in Montpellier. Glasgow have no hope of making the knockout stages, Rory. So this just looks like it has 5 points nailed on, unless Glasgow want to come and play for pride and put in a really good show.
Yeah, they're probably more likely to do that next week, aren't they? I mean, I think they did kind of put together a big performance at the end of the pool stages last year, but I think they'll probably save that for their home performance. So if they're going to try and rest players, they'll probably rest them for this week and then front load themselves against Exeter next week. It's kind of set up for Leinster to go and at least put one foot in the quarterfinal. I mean, Montpellier can keep pace with them, but it'll take an almighty turnaround next week in Montpellier for Montpellier to leapfrog them. I mean, they could both go through quite conceivably, and also Montpellier have to go to Exeter and win, which is not easy. So yeah, all indications are Leinster's form is excellent. They have a six-day workaround, so they kind of have to pick their teams accordingly. So I think they'll pick, you know, they'll make a lot of changes in between the two games. I think we'll see some of the players who probably were in form over the Christmas period play this weekend, and then we rested for the big game in Montpellier.
Okay, Eddie, as former Irish coach, where you're looking at players who play very well, and there's a big media call for them to come in. Jordan Larmour has been around the squad a bit. Joe Schmidt has seen him up close, and we don't know what he's seen in those training sessions. But just based on what you're seeing from Larmour on the pitch, are there misgivings you would have about throwing a guy like that into test level, or is he actually just ready?
It's hard to say if he's ready for test rugby, because we're judging him on Pro 14 form, which, look, to be honest, with the strength and depth Leinster have, they're not getting put under pressure in many games where they're really tight games. The only team that put up to them this Christmas was Connacht, really. So it's hard to judge him on that. But I think that maybe the metric for Joe Schmidt might be, if Larmour starts in the European games now, particularly down, let's say, if he went down to Montpellier and he had a barnstormer down there, you know, that's really would make his mark. And then again, the question for Joe Schmidt is, first game of the championship away in Paris, is that the place to put a 20-year-old kid in? Probably not, unless he's really confident he's going to cope. So if Larmour continues his current form in the Champions Cup, then he certainly is a contender for the Six Nations. He still mightn't start in Paris. It might be at home, where Joe Schmidt tends to give fellas their first outing where he thinks they're most capable of dealing with it. And I think that Larmour could still make it. If he delivers in Europe, he could still make it into the Six Nations squad, but probably feature later in the tournament, like at home against the Scotland or against Italy or something, you know. So that might be the pathway. It would be a massive ask to Trump if he doesn't play in the European games, for example. If Rob Kearney gets a start and Larimer doesn't, it would be a massive ask to Trump in Paris then in his first cap, you know.
Yeah.
So they're the kind of dynamics around it. But I certainly think if he gets the European games and he keeps his form, I mean, he's been outstanding. Probably at times defensively, you know, we tend to look at one side of it. He probably got caught a couple of times here and there, but overall he's lighting it up. And if he can do it at the top end, which is the European, you know, Champions Cup, he's definitely in with a shout for the Six Nations.
Ulster then have La Rochelle. Ulster increasingly a bit of a mystery to people. They've also announced Stephen Donald's going to come in as Leifanu's replacement, who kicked the winning points for New Zealand in the World Cup final when he was out fishing a couple of days before. So Donald's going to join, but Leifanu's there for the time being. So La Rochelle are big and they're fast, steady. They're second in the top 14. They did a number of on Ulster over in France. You called Ulster a bungee team. Stephen Ferris said they're like a yo-yo, in his opinion, because they spin around at the bottom for a while. They're spinning at the bottom right now. Can you see them suddenly turning it around for a big game like this and actually putting in a big performance and coming away with a win here?
Yes, we could. They have done it time and time again, but their biggest problem is backing it up. So I worry at the moment that also, though, I think there's a sense of just a lack of confidence at the moment. You see the confidence slipping away from them. You saw it last weekend at the RDS. They just ebbed away. You saw it, down in Connacht. You know, it's just it's hard to put your finger on it. It's one of the great mysteries of rugby at the moment for me. But I think the problem is La Rochelle are not your average French team at the moment. La Rochelle, for some reason, have got the bit between their teeth. They are happy to go on the road and play, and they will come after Ulster with everything they've got, because if they can pull Ulster away at home, they're locked into the quarterfinal with probably a home or close to a home quarterfinal. Ulster, this is backs to the wall time for Ulster. If Ulster lose to La Rochelle at home, heading to Watts, even though Watts don't have that to play for probably, or you never know, maybe if Watts get 5 points, they're still in with an outside chance of qualifying. But going to Watts to get a result to stay in the tournament is not what they want to face down at the moment, given their capacity to play brilliantly at times and brutal. There's a lack of cohesiveness, a lack of consistency, and they look like a team that their confidence begin to ebb at a really bad time of the year.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, this La Rochelle game, it could make or break Ulster's season.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Right. In front of a home crowd, it could be a really subdued atmosphere if that goes badly. Rory, you get the feeling patience is thin on the ground up there at the moment. So a word on how you think it's going to go on Saturday, and then the Stephen Donald signing.
Yeah, I think La Rochelle will win. I think they're the better team. They're kind of making all the other French teams look bad, and they just have more firepower than Ulster. And Donald will, if it goes that way, Donald will be a Pro 14 player, and he's probably more than capable of getting them through a couple of games. But I don't think he's an upgrade on Leifanu. He's 34 now. He's probably on the tail end of his career, and this is one last contract, so it's not a great signing. I think we heard that it might be someone more exciting like Matt Guido. It's a little bit underwhelming, but that's the situation they're in.
Okay, lads, we'll leave it there. Rory Connor from the Irish Independent, Eddie O'Sullivan, thanks a million, lads.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Eddie.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.